Hi, Applied AI podcast listeners. This is your host, Justin Grammans. Just a quick note before we start this next episode. Since recording this, my guest, Sam Tyner-Monroe, has changed jobs, and she is now the Managing Director of Accountable AI at DLA Piper. We wish her the best in her new role and future opportunities, and I'm certain you'll enjoy the conversation that we had. So with that out of the way, on with the show.
My big suggestion would be make sure you have some good, solid statistics, because when you take statistics, you really learn about the modeling. You need that linear algebra background. You know, you need something that teaches you about the assumptions that models are making so that you can apply those effectively. Because I find now that it's really easy, especially with all of the great, you know, and free online learning tools that are out there, which I'm totally for, but it makes it really easy for people to apply things that they don't necessarily understand. And that they don't understand the assumptions that those models are making.
Welcome to the Conversations on Applied AI podcast, where Justin Grammans and the team at Emerging Technologies North talk with experts in the fields of artificial intelligence and deep learning. In each episode, we cut through the hype and dive into how these technologies are being applied to real-world problems today. We hope that you find this episode educational and applicable to your industry and connect with us to learn more about our organization at appliedai.mn. Enjoy.
Welcome everyone to the Conversations on Applied AI podcast. Today on the program, we have Sam Tyner-Monroe. Sam is an accomplished applied statistician and data scientist with a PhD in statistics from Iowa State University. She has expertise in data visualization and deep experience in developing and applying statistical modeling and machine learning techniques to the social and physical sciences, as well as within the federal government. Currently, she's a data scientist at Tritura, where her and her team enable data-driven lawyering through advanced data analytics, AI and machine learning, e-discovery, and fact development. So very, very cool. Finally, at the little-known fact, maybe, that she is a co-organizer of the Our Ladies of DC chapter. So thank you, Sam, for giving back to the community and supporting organizations like that and for being on the program today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Awesome. Well, I gave a little bit of a background with regards to where you're at today, but maybe you could give a little bit more with regards to how did you get to where you're at, maybe the trajectory of your career.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll start way back in college. That's usually where I start the story. I was one of those math people, and there's big air quotes around math person there. And being a math person, I thought, well, I'll just go to college and major in math. And then being an overachiever type A type of person, I also majored in economics and French. French was just for fun, which like who takes on a college major for fun? I don't know. Me, I guess I'm just weird like that. And then while I was taking my math classes, I was really encouraged by one of my professors at Augustana, Tom Bankston. He really encouraged me to do a research experience for undergraduates or an REU. And so I ended up doing the REU that Valparaiso University has. And there I was working on a project in combinatorics. So very, very like quote unquote pure math. And I realized pretty quickly that I didn't like pure math. I didn't want to do pure math, but also I learned about graduate school in that program. And before that, I had no idea that graduate school was really even an option. And so they were describing the program, I think it was in Purdue, the math department. They were talking about how they get stipends and, you know, they just go to school and they learn. And I was like, I can get paid to go to school. I love going to school.
Sure.
So from there, I decided that I wanted to go to graduate school. And then I took my last year of college, my senior year of college, I took all of the statistics courses that were available to us, which I think was a grand total of 2 statistics courses at my small private liberal arts college. So I took those statistics classes and I decided I wanted to get a PhD in statistics from that. And so that's how I got the PhD in statistics. And then, that was kind of that was a lot of talking I just did.
Well, you are the guest on the show. I guess I will say, I think you and I are very similar in a lot of ways. I went to a small private liberal arts college here in the Twin Cities. I majored in math, applied math in particular, because like you, I tell people I got sort of sick of solving for X. Like I wanted to understand like, what does the X mean? Like, and I minored in physics because I really think that is a pure application of like hey, how far is this ball going to go when I throw it? I love solving those equations. I hate just solving equations for equation's sake, right? So the pure math side kind of turned me off as well. And when I got done, it was more or less like, you know, do you want to be an actuarist, you know, or an actuarial sciences, you know, do you want to teach, you know, do you want to go to master's, basically like move on to get a master's degree? And I decided to go into software. I decided to work to basically kind of like use the logic that I think I've learned and move in more into a software development and software engineering practice. But I feel for you with regards to going through the math stuff. And I guess to back up, I feel like math is cool again. You know, I think this whole idea around AI and machine learning,
yeah.
I feel like finally we're getting what's due to us with regards to, you know, it's cool to be in this field.
Yeah, it really is. And that's why I switched sort of from a statistician to a data scientist, because I think that every data scientist is at least a little bit of a statistician, or at least a good data scientist is a little bit of a statistician. And so that's why I sort of, I don't want to say rebranded myself, but like, that's sort of why I switched into calling myself a data scientist as opposed to a statistician, because I think that data science is statistics and there's so much overlap there. Not 100% overlap for sure, but yeah, just that's sort of how I decided to move into data science.
Yeah. Did you find your econ work kind of help in that place as well at all, or not really?
That's a great question. The econ piece, it really, what it did was it showed me, again, it was kind of one of those things of, well, now I know what I don't want to do. So what don't I want to do? Like, so there were some graduate, you know, level courses in statistics about, you know, forecasting financial things and whatnot. And so I sort of realized there that like, yeah, no, this is not really something that I want to do. I'm not interested in like hypothetical numbers about like markets that you can't really touch. You know, I want to do things with, you know, people and things that you can actually, you know, see in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You know, I mentioned that you were a part of, that you co-organized the one in DC, the Our Ladies of DC. But prior to that, you actually were one of the people that did the Our Ladies in Ames, Iowa, right?
Yes. Yeah. And in 2016, I started up. That was maybe about 4 years after Our Ladies officially started. But myself and another graduate student, Natalia Da Silva, we co-started the Ames chapter of Our Ladies DC. And that was a great opportunity because we were able to get one of the original founders of Our Ladies DC, Gabriella De Queiroz, to come out and do a visit with us at Iowa State.
Wow.
So that was really
awesome.
Really good experience.
That's cool. So you obviously were using R then when you were in graduate school and stuff, or even prior to that?
Yes. I first started using R in graduate school. I had taken a math elective my senior year where we used it a little bit, but I really, really got into it our first semester at Iowa State. There was a one credit class where it was just, hey, everybody, let's just get you all on the same page in terms of your R knowledge.
Gotcha. You were just very interested in going deeper, I guess, or starting a community around this locally.
Yeah, absolutely. That was one thing that really drew me in was, I think the fact, one, that it's, you know, focused around women and non-binary people. I really appreciated that as, you know, I've been this math person my whole life. So I'm used to kind of being one of the only women or girls in the room. And, you know, statistics compared to something like physics is much more female dominated, but it's not overall female dominated yet. And so I really liked that idea of having that space where we can all just have like this safe space where we don't have to worry about, you know, people not listening to us or, you know, various other side effects of being a woman in the world.
Yeah, for sure. Well, like I say, I've started a couple different community groups here and I commend you for doing that. It takes, you know, people want to give back and put energy back into the community. That's a great way to kind of raise your hand and be like, I'm interested in doing this. Who wants to support me in this role? Or you guys help me in this mission. And so that's awesome that you did that, not only back in Ames, but obviously, you know, part of the DC chapter and continue to move that forward. You talk about statistics and then it's moved into data science, which, you know, science is a great word to use, right? Everyone, it sounds good because there's a lot of science to it. Now everyone's sort of talking about artificial intelligence and machine learning. And I guess, you know, the work that you're doing today now really much kind of fits into this new sort of vocabulary, huh? I guess, how do you see it, or how has it changed, I guess, you know, or has it not really changed much in your mind?
I guess in my work hasn't changed a whole lot. And I took, you know, statistical learning classes when I was in graduate school. And so I learned all about all of those machine learning models. And all of those things are still around. There's just even more now, you know, with all sorts of deep learning, things like that. I don't really do any of that, to be honest, any sort of deep learning things. But yeah, the work I do hasn't changed a whole lot. But there are things that, you know, I'm staying aware of things, you know, and especially things that are really flashy, like, you know, ChatGPT and all of that.
For sure, for sure. So you're doing data science. You're a data scientist at this company that's doing a lot of, you know, e-discovery and I guess called it lawyering in some ways. At least that's what the website said. So tell us a little bit about, like, what's a day in the life for you when somebody's getting into this career, and what do you do?
Yeah. So my team is a really small team. So in our company, the data science team is split into like an applications team and an analytics team, and so I'm on the analytics team. And there's various things that we do as part of that team. One thing right now that we're really focusing on is improving internal software. So helping the applications folks or writing the programs using, you know, Python Spacy to help write those programs. A lot of that is things like document processing and looking for specific clauses in contracts and things like that. Named entity recognition is a big one that we use. And I actually really don't do a whole lot of that. I tend to work more with the client. So as opposed to having internal tools that I'm working on, I'm getting client data and I'm working with clients. And so I usually use R over Python to do that just because I'm more comfortable with it. But right now I'm working almost exclusively with insurance companies. So primarily auto insurers and life insurers. And what we're doing is we're auditing their automated decision-making tools. So whenever for life insurance, for example, you know, traditionally you would have to go get a doctor to fill out a form or something like that with all of your stats on it, you know, take some blood, some other bodily samples, do some testing there. But what they do now, a lot of the times is called accelerated underwriting. And so they have these algorithms, models, you know, AI, whatever you want to call it, that they do to process other information about you. And instead of having to get your blood drawn, you just fill out a form online, and then you find out whether or not you can get life insurance.
Interesting. By pulling in data from all sorts of different sources?
Yes.
Behind the scenes?
Yes.
But yeah, a lot to think about there. I mean, the one thing that popped in my head is, as you were talking about what the system is doing, what does the future of work look like to you? It's kind of a far-out question, but the software you're providing is probably stuff that a lot of humans used to be able to do, right? So someone would come out and some nurse or whatever, you know, some RN would come out and do this. Now they don't have to do that anymore. You think that's good, bad, indifferent? You know, I'm curious to know what you think.
So I don't know enough about like the life insurance industry, say, in particular, to know about, like, you know, jobs and the market there and all of that. But I really think that I find the discussion around, you know, oh, is AI going to, you know, get rid of jobs or things like that, I find that to be kind of a silly discussion, just because things are always changing and humans are always making changes and they're always adapting. Are some jobs going to change and or maybe even go away with the advent of new AI tools and things? And is how you're going to change your job going to be different? Yes, it's definitely going to with all of these new tools. But I think that humans are generally very adaptable. And I think that, you know, we decide what society looks like, and we can choose to use AI in a way that makes our lives easier and it makes our decisions more accurate and things like that, as opposed to thinking of it as this big specter that's going to just kill all these jobs.
Agreed. Yeah, I think anything can be dialed to an extreme, I guess. And the other question I'd like to ask people is kind of like, yeah, what is AI to you? Everyone's got their own little definition of it, but none's right or wrong at all. I'm just kind of curious when somebody says, you work in the AI field. Tell me, what is AI?
I like the definition of AI where it's split into two, right? You have general AI and then you have narrow AI. So general AI is like the Hollywood type AI where, you know, you're watching like iRobot or Westworld or something like that. that stuff is totally hypothetical right now, doesn't exist at all. And then there's narrow AI, which is, I think, what most people are actually doing. So anybody who says they do AI, that's actually what they're doing, right? Is narrow AI. So where you are teaching a computer, you're coding up some code and putting in some data to teach a computer how to make decisions or make predictions about something.
Yeah, totally. Do you see us reaching general AI? Do you see, I guess that's the bigger picture. Also, I'm just kind of curious in terms of where you see even your product, the product that you're working on, you know, go in the future. Is it going to get smarter and better and more adaptable?
I'm very skeptical that general AI will ever exist, simply because the connections that computers are capable of building are very different than the connections that humans are capable of building with their neurons and their brains versus, you know, ones and zeros on a computer. So for that reason, I'm very skeptical. But I don't think that that means that AI is going to, it's not going to stop growing. It's not going to become less relevant. It's just going to keep on going. But I'm not sure that, you know, iRobot or Westworld is ever going to happen.
Yeah. It certainly doesn't feel like it today. I mean, you know, you can show a two-year-old, you know, a picture of something in the abstract and they'll say, that's a dog.
Yeah.
And you show that to a computer and the computer's like, it has no clue, you know, that isn't a dog. So there's something there for sure that human can see things and recognize things that computers need to be overly trained. The future remains to be seen. There's been a lot of things with regards to things that have happened, I guess, in my lifetime that I maybe never thought would actually happen. So tough to say. It's always a good question, though. I always like to ask people about that.
Yeah. And some people are like, yes, absolutely. It's going to happen in the next 50 years or something. And I'm just like, okay, that's fine. I don't think so, but that's your opinion.
Yeah. Well, are there any things that you see as you're looking around in this field that you're excited about, I guess, whether it's just even data science or statistics, algorithms, you know, AI, anything that you're like, wow, this is very, very fascinating to me?
There's certainly a lot of new tools out there. And, you know, we're collecting more and more data all of the time. And the more data that we have access to, the more we can do with it. So I recently saw this particular tool, which I can't name, unfortunately, because I'm under attorney-client privilege, but they say they have over a trillion pieces of information about, you know, millions and millions of people. We're talking like tens of millions of people. And they're using this AI tool that they have to predict based on some behavioral information and then some health information, basically how much are you going to cost an insurance company with your medical costs. And that's something that is, you know, fraught with all sorts of issues, right? One, just the sheer amount of data that they have on people, I think is a huge concern for a lot of people. Because, I mean, they've got, what did I buy at the store? When did I fill my last prescription? Did I go to my last doctor's visit? You know, all these sorts of variables that they have on people. That to me was probably what I took away the most, is just the sheer amount of data. So, I mean, the more data you have, the more AI is going to be able to do.
And that's just the healthcare stuff. It is amazing, like what the Apple Watch might have people, right? Once you start pulling in information that is more in the consumer space, and
yeah,
there's a location component to that, right? Google, our phones, everybody knows where we're at. Our photos that we're taking, you know, and, you know, some of it is just sort of tangential information, but it all points to, you're right, a particular diagnosis or, yeah, it's just sort of building the case against, yep, this person is going to do this next. You know, to me, it's all about prediction, right? In a lot of ways, what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about prediction. A thing that I've found being a statistician and getting a PhD in statistics, you get very comfortable with uncertainty. And statistics is really all about quantifying uncertainty. So you know how much you don't know, but your average person hates uncertainty. You know, they really want to know. And I say this now because I work with many attorneys. Attorneys hate uncertainty. They probably hate it the most out of anybody, just because they want to be able to see and apply a specific law or make a decision or whatever. But I'm very comfortable with uncertainty. So I don't need to know, you know, everything about myself that a machine is going to predict. But a lot of people want to know that. And a lot of people can make a lot of money doing that type of prediction.
Yeah, for sure. There's an interesting book. I forget who the author is, but I think it's called Prediction Machines. And it's written by a guy who is an economist. And really this whole idea that, you know, AI is really sort of broken down to predictions. And basically, likelihood that one thing's going to happen more than the other, right? And it's not cut and dry. You're right. If you show a computer vision model a particular thing, it's like, you know, 80% it's a cat, but still 5% it might be a fish, or 1%, you know, it's a dog. It does come down to, there is no black and white, and some people just, that doesn't work well with.
Yeah, the one example that really sticks out in my memory is, so I'm from the Chicago area initially. And so in 2016, when the Cubs won the World Series, I like to think back to, I think 538. So 538 is doing sports and politics at the same time, right? Yeah. The Cubs are in the World Series. It's the 2016 election. And in the same week, the Cubs had the same chance of winning the World Series that Donald Trump did to win the presidency. And I think it was around like 30% or something like that. And I just go back to that because the Cubs won the World Series.
And Donald Trump
did it. President, but neither of them were favored in that scenario. So, you know, uncertainty really is the tricky thing to deal with.
Yeah, for sure. No, I do. Yeah, I haven't tracked that website much a whole lot. Well, Nate Silver and all that type of stuff, it really popular during the political season. And,
yeah.
And he was even calling it even as it got close to the end. He's like, this is too close to call. But it wasn't until, like, even with Trump, I think it wasn't even until like the final hours that it was like flipped, because it was just that close. It was just crazy with regards to the likelihood of it was going to go one way or the other. So, and probably same thing with the Cubs too. No one really knew what the heck was going to happen, because it was just so unlikely. That's cool. Well, so for people getting into this field, so rewind the clock back. Say I'm going to a private liberal arts college today, right? And I'm going to be graduating, or maybe not even graduating. I'm looking at maybe getting a career in this field. You know, what are some classes you suggest people, you know, take? Are there any books they should be reading? Or obviously the Pi Ladies group, you know, they should be attending, I guess, you know, or the R group.
Yeah,
they
definitely
should be attending.
My big suggestion would be, make sure you have some good solid statistics. Because when you take statistics, you really learn about the modeling. You need that linear algebra background. You need something that teaches you about the assumptions that models are making so that you can apply those effectively. Because I find now that it's really easy, especially with all of the great, you know, and free online learning tools that are out there, which I'm totally for, but it makes it really easy for people to apply things that they don't necessarily understand. And that they don't understand the assumptions that those models are making. So I think that would be really important. And then also getting some basic sampling, being comfortable with the idea of sampling would also be important.
Good. Okay. So look for that with regards to classes and stuff like that. And yeah, you know, it's like I say, I just was thinking back when I had an applied math degree, when I came out, it felt very narrow with regards to what I could go into, but feels like kind of, yeah, we're using statistics and applied math sort of everywhere these days. So probably
encourage
definitely. People to
Yeah,
apply.
And another thing I would suggest is getting some comfort with reproducibility. So making sure that you can write code and share it with others and they can reproduce it, maybe, you know, take a course on Docker or something like that. And then also exploratory data analysis, I think, is really important. Make sure you have a good grounding in how to do that, because so often you'll fit a model and you'll get, you know, all the way down to the finish line, and then you realize that you missed some key piece about what's actually in the data. So make sure you start with getting to know the data well.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Sure. Yeah. I mean, some of it is just, understand the problem set you're trying to solve, or the problem you're trying to solve, rather than getting so deep into, I'm just going to do the statistical analysis just for the sake of it. You're probably going to need to understand the real world application in some ways.
Absolutely. And the 80-20 rule totally applies, where 80% of your time should be spent thinking about the problem and about how you're going to go about solving it and getting to know the data versus the 20% that's actually fitting the model.
That's great. Well, how do people reach out to you, Sam?
Yeah. So the best place to find me is probably on Twitter. I would say I'm on there more than I'm on LinkedIn, but I am getting more into LinkedIn these days. But yeah, Twitter for sure, LinkedIn a second.
Well, there are other things that you wanted to talk about that maybe I didn't cover. This was kind of a pretty generalized conversational talk on, you know, artificial intelligence and machine learning. And that's what I just love to do, is just kind of bring people in that are working in the field and just anywhere around this sort of whole area. But yeah, there are other topics maybe we didn't talk about.
I'd love to just talk more about some other resources. I do teach quite a bit. I have taught quite a few workshops and things. And so I do like to, you know, give resources to folks. So definitely some conferences to check out would be like the Posit Conf, formerly our Studio Conf. If you can afford that, that's a great conference to go to. They also have lots of scholarships and things that you could apply for. And then Women in Statistics and Data Science is a good one. And then also meetup groups, you know, R user groups, Python user groups, statistics groups, R ladies, Pi ladies, those things. Shout out for one of my favorite books in recent memory, which is Data Feminism, which is totally free and available online. It's just one of the books about data that has probably blown my mind the most. It makes you think about the assumptions that you're making implicitly and even like the ways you record data or the words you use to describe data, talking about data cleaning or binary gender in data, things like that. It's just really, really makes you think about how so much of data needs a little bit of a feminist lens.
Okay, well, cool. Yeah, we'll definitely search for that and we'll put a link to that. It's just called Data Feminism. You said it's free.
Yep, it's totally free online. They have like a nice coffee table book copy of it that you can get to.
The Applied AI group, we're on Meetup. We just had a meetup last night, actually. So we meet the first Thursday of the month. But I found meetup.com to be it's phenomenal. You just go out there, type in anything you want. And now, you know, with everything being on Zoom, you can pretty much attend a meetup anywhere in the world in some ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For Our Ladies DC, one of our co-organizers for a while was living in Italy because she wanted to start up a chapter in Rome. And so she wanted to help us co-organize for a while so she can sort of get a feel for it before she started up the chapter in Rome. So it's a great opportunity to meet people from all over the world. I've met tons of folks. People show up to our meetings from Indonesia, California, Montreal, all over the place.
It's awesome. And since you guys are focusing a lot on R in particular, I was just kind of curious, have you seen any of like code writing tools? You know, have you seen anything with regards to, you know, that's the whole thing is like, you know, AI being able to write anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
From Java to Python to probably R. I haven't tried it with any R stuff, but I've asked like ChatGPT to write me some stuff. And I have a lot of opinions with regards to not only the quality of the code, but really, it's okay, fine. You've gotten a little free piece of snippet, right? I mean, I could have done that, you know, off of Stack Overflow
in
the past
exactly.
10 years. Does that come up in conversations at all with your meetups? Like what are you typically sort of talking about in your group?
Yeah. So we haven't talked about anything like code generation or anything like that yet. I haven't used it myself personally, so I have no idea about what the quality of it is. But yeah, mostly when we have our meetups, and we have one next week, we focus on, you know, we can do, you know, one single R package we can talk about, or we'll talk about career or career oriented things, or we'll bring in a couple people from a local graduate program. So we had the Georgetown Masters in Data Science folks come out and talk to our group. We get a lot of people who are exactly like what you were saying, you know, they're sort of starting out and they want to know, you know, what should I do? What classes should I take? You know, should I get a master's? Should I get a PhD? And so, you know, all of the organizers at that point were all PhDs. And so we were like, we got to bring somebody in from the master's program to get sort of that flavor of it in. Because we'll just tell them to go get a PhD, but I don't think you need a PhD.
What was your PhD? I mean, and did you focus on a specific area thesis?
Yeah, so primarily I did social network analysis for my thesis, but it's one of those things that I don't do a whole lot anymore, unfortunately. I had a package on CRAN for a while, but it's got taken down multiple times, and it's just one of those things I just don't have the energy or time to maintain anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like your group virtual? Is it in person? Or you do a little bit of both? Have you done both?
Yeah, right now we're still virtual. And again, that's mostly because we can attract people from all over the world and get people from all over the world to attend. But we are talking about going back in person, and we'll probably do that over the summer, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's been tough. We were in person. The Applied AI group did meet in person. And then, you know, basically March 2020 was the last, you know, first week of March was the last one we had. And then we went virtual. And I think, like you just said, like we can attract either both a wide audience and also a wide range of speakers, right?
Yeah.
I have the person that spoke with us that was on our meetup last night, she is from Northwestern University. And so dealing a lot with AI and healthcare, I was like, boy, I couldn't ever have that person fly into Minnesota and do that presentation, right?
So absolutely,
you're able to get such a wide range of speakers. But I do miss the in-person component. And yeah, our intention is to kind of mix and match, do a little bit of both. Do stuff in person because it is nice to have pizza and hang out. a lot of it's just networking. I mean, I've known so many people that have gotten jobs and changed careers and have just, you know, built new and cool applications, just started companies because of our, you know, group getting together. So there's a huge component to that that you just don't get if you're just online in a Zoom call.
Yeah, yeah. Because you can kind of be, you know, off to the side doing your own thing in another browser window or whenever. And, but yeah, I still myself am getting used to like interacting with people out in the world again. That's something that I need to reaccustom myself to still.
Yeah, I know. Pretty easy just to sort of stay in your own basement or stay in your own office or, you know, whatever it is to go back out again. So, well, I appreciate you taking the time and taking the time to reach out and be on the Applied AI Conversations on Applied AI podcast today.
Yeah, thanks so much,
Sam,
for having me.
Yeah, and again, thank you for all of the work that you're doing and look forward to keeping in touch and good luck in your future endeavors. I'm sure there's a lot of interesting things going on in data science and statistics, and it's kind of a never-ending field, it feels like to me.
Absolutely.
You've listened to another episode of the Conversations on Applied AI podcast. We hope you are eager to learn more about applying artificial intelligence and deep learning within your organization. You can visit us at appliedai.mn to keep up to date on our events and connect with our amazing community. Please don't hesitate to reach out to Justin at appliedai.mn if you are interested in participating in a future episode. Thank you for listening.